As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Aaron Portzine here. It's the Front and Nationwide Live Room podcast. A little after 1 o'clock, we got a listeners coming into the room right now, the live room as it is. We'll let that populate. And I'll start with a couple of things from the rink today. Okay, you guys want the good news or the bad news first? Before I start going here, a reminder, if you want to ask a question, by all means, step up to the queue. I'll bring you in. We can talk just like it's a radio show. It's pretty cool that way. Or you can chat. You can leave a message, as Paul B already has, through the chat. We'll try to get to as many of those as we can. Today at the rink, the news. Let's start with the good news, because it seems like that's been in short supply here lately. Eric Goodbranson activated. Not activated because he was never IR'd, but he will play tonight after missing the last part of two games with an upper body injury. Believe a concussion, not confirmed. And Sean Corrali has been activated off IR, and he will return tonight as well. This really isn't bad news, I guess, unless you're Jack Rossovic. It's just kind of news. But with all of these injuries, and Patrick Laine, of course, is out. If you followed the news from yesterday, 3 to 4 weeks with an ankle, he joins so many others. Voracek out still. Werenski, of course, out. Blankenberg out. Some big, big hits to the Blue Jackets. But Jack Rossovic is a healthy scratch tonight, which he would not speak to the media. He asked a PR person today at the rink to tell the media that he didn't want to talk. Didn't even want to say no comment. You don't take offense to these things. If you do what I do for a living, it is what it is. I don't know what Jack could possibly say, because it does feel like we've had this conversation a bunch of times. A lot of times last year, first 60 games of the season, maybe first 55 anyways. You know, what is he going through? What is he seeing? Where is this going? Last year, he turned it on at the end of the season, which I think only makes this more frustrating for him, and I'm sure for the Blue Jackets, because the hope was that he would be past this. But he, you know, I want to say this too. It's not like this team has played really well except for Jack Rossovic. This team has not played well, almost to a man. They have not played well. How he gets singled out, you know, Brad Larson would not go into much detail today. I asked him how it got to this point. How could it get to this point with all of the injuries? Is this simply a message to Jack, or did you feel like you've got 12 better forwards? And he just sort of reiterated that he's not going to play tonight. So when you consider this team's struggles down the middle of the ice, wow, does that this one has to sting. It's at home, his hometown, no less. It's a team that's struggling, even though they've played a little bit better of late. Can't really fault the effort against the Islanders, the overtime loss. But this team is obviously not doing well. And for them to decide that they're a better team tonight without Jack Roslovic has to sort of be a kick in the backside. So a reminder, if you want to ask questions, please step to the queue and I will bring you in for those. Some other things we can talk about. I wrote about this for Sunday. I believe that the mission statement of this season, it's pretty awful that it only took 10 games or so for it to happen. But I think the mission statement of this season, or what the reason for this season is, has changed. And first it was the just flat, not good enough play for way too long, long before they got to Finland. But it sort of hit rock bottom there, or exacerbated there, the second game especially. They just weren't good enough, didn't play well enough, not enough guys were going. And now the injuries really sapped them of any chances. It was a long shot chance to get back into it after the way that they've started. But now to take Werenski out and to take Blankenberg out, my oh my, that's rough. And so I think you can safely say that this season is not, it can't be anymore about making the playoffs. Sure, they could try to squeeze every bit of energy and effort out of this team and what, finish 12th in the East if they got it together. I mean, you know, you see where I'm going. To me, and I wrote this for Sunday, it's part of the Blue Jackets Sunday gathering, our sort of weekly notes column. I feel like this season now becomes almost a frustrating repeat of last season. I say frustrating because last season wasn't frustrating. It sort of had an air of newness to it. But I think this season needs to be all about getting the young guys ready to go and giving them incredibly intense and beneficial development that maybe you can't do if you're in the middle of a race. So, and I think beyond that, the team needs to decide what to do. Does that mean sending them to Cleveland, where, you know, I don't want to go through every guy here. We can talk about this at length if you wish. But just for instance, where Cole Sillinger could play on a top line, could play power play and penalty kill, could play late in games, could take every big draw for the Monsters, really put him in that role that you think he can one day fulfill in the NHL level. Why not give Kent Johnson 3 months in Cleveland at center? Take the faceoffs. Play with some good wingers down there. It would be a tough sell, and there's all sorts of dynamics we can get into. I think it's something you have to consider, and honestly, I think it is something that they've talked about. So these are things to look for the rest of the season. There's really no reason for them to do it right now, but I think they've got to monitor these guys, and as long as Sillinger and Chinnikov and Johnson are playing sort of secondary roles in the NHL and not really thriving, and let's be honest, they're not really thriving right now. I thought Sillinger was pretty good. One of his better games this season against the Islanders, and really, really took off after he scored. So maybe he's coming out of it. But these guys have not played particularly well. Chinnikov's had some moments. I think Johnson's had some moments. But they're not supposed to be part-time, secondary fringe players. Give them an opportunity to run with it in Cleveland. Give Cleveland an opportunity to go deep in the playoffs and get some great experience there. Look what happened to that team when Werenski was there in Cleveland with Bjorkstrand. I want to say it was 16, with Bjorkstrand, Josh Anderson. Man, that team, there's a lot of guys from that team that came on up to Columbus and became a very integral part of the team that made it to the playoffs 4 years in a row. Not a bad idea. But at the same time, you could also just start playing those guys in higher roles at the NHL and just make sure they don't get buried by it, but give them all the experience they can possibly get at the NHL. My point is, I would hate for this to go on as it is right now for 3 or 4 more months, have them playing fringe roles at the NHL level and have the team sputtering, but not really achieving anything that can benefit them in the future. I don't need to tell anybody listening to this podcast that there's a young man named Connor Bedard available in the draft this year. I am not suggesting they tank. I'm not. I'm suggesting you prepare this team for the future. And whatever that means for this year's team is what it means. maybe it does end up that you land a great pick. There's other guys near the top with Bedard that are really, really good players. This is a great draft. So all things to consider. Let's get to some questions. We have just one person in the queue. Again, if you want to step up to the queue, don't think you don't have a great radio voice. Listen to me. I have a face for newsprint. I have a voice for newsprint. Please step on up to the queue. Feel free to ask any question you want. We'll go for about a half hour, 45 minutes here. We can talk about all of those things we just discussed and more. Our first question goes to the great Kyle Z. Kyle Z, I believe, calling from San Antonio. At this point, is the front nationwide podcast have reach or what?
I know. The Alamo chapter down here. It's great.
Impressive.
Quick question for you. Where is John Davidson's role in this? Obviously, he's, as the president of the hockey operations, he's the big picture guy. How much has his voice maybe, or how much does that weigh into the decision as far as sending these guys down, not sending these guys down, just the overall direction of the club? You know, where exactly is his role in this side by side with Yarmo, or making those personnel decisions, making those staffing decisions?
Yeah. So best I can tell, John Davidson, he is very much a part of hockey operations. I don't think he sits in on the scouting meetings. He's not traveling to see players. He's not, you know, going to snowy rinks in Moose Jaw, Canada, and this sort of thing anymore. It is an executive role. He has earned as much. But I do think in times of trial and tribulation, which here we are, he does tend to step in. And I go back to the Seth Jones situation a couple years ago, where when it first became known that Seth Jones would not promise the Blue Jackets that he would sign an extension, didn't demand a trade, but basically said, I don't think I'm going to extend here. There was some thought within the organization, from Yarmo specifically, we're going to try to get the best trade for Seth Jones this summer. If we don't get it, we'll go into next season with him. And it was John Davidson who pretty clearly said, no, we're not doing this. This is how we're handling this. We're taking care of this right now. This is not going to be Panarin/Bobrovsky part two. So I think there are times where John Davidson does involve himself when he starts to see the ship maybe going off course a little bit. That is the big voice from on high that kind of makes it clear, yeah, let's do this. I don't think he steps on toes unnecessarily. I think he understands that. I think he's been a part of enough front offices where he recognizes you let hockey people do their jobs, and he's pretty hands off with Yarmo, but he also is the contact point for ownership. Let's not kid ourselves. That's truly his power of this position, something they never had when Housen was here and when Doug McLean was here, a person on the hockey side that could be a representative to ownership above the GM. So he explains things to the owner, very close with John P. McConnell, very close, obviously, with Mike Priest on the business side. These are the times where I do think he involves himself. I'm not sure he would go to Yarmo and say, we're sending these kids to Cleveland no matter what. But I think it's a discussion that he would want to have. And he would want to hear the right things from them. Because, you know, a really good front office does not always agree on things. They always agree to work together at the end, but he is the most powerful voice in the room. And so if he needs to put the gavel down, then he can, is what I would say to that. I have no sense that he has intervened here and said, okay, here's what we're doing. And I still think they need to let the dust settle here, just with where they're at, with guys coming back in, Gudbranson, now Corrali, Roslovic's out of the lineup. You know, let this settle for a couple of weeks rather than be totally abrupt. Give the room a chance to play. I thought they played okay in New York, but just keep your eye on things and make sure you're not wasting a season. That's the one thing that I think they've gotten better at here. you cannot spend entire seasons in vain. They have to have a purpose. You're either in it to win it, or you're working for the future. And this club has done no man's land way too many times. I don't think they're going to do that again here. Kyle, thanks for the question.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's go to Paul B. Paul, go ahead.
Hey, Porty, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm good. I got to say, probably the most surprising news I saw today was Elvis is back in net.
Uh-huh.
It's been very refreshing to see Corpy in there the last couple of games, and it's reminded me how different those two guys are.
Yeah.
It's,
well, I don't know that I was that surprised. I mean, they're not going to let Elvis sit too long. I think Corpy's play has allowed him to split the pipes rather than to just be the guy that plays when Elvis needs a break. I think that's going to change. But I don't think it would be fair to either of them to let them sit too long. And, you know, I talked to Elvis today. He was pretty loose. And I think he's had a nice little refresher. I'll say this, too. Like, the team played pretty awful in front of Korpisalo in Tampere, Finland,
mm-hmm.
in game two. Five goals. I don't think you put those on Korpisalo, because, God, there's so many breakdowns. But that's what Elvis has faced for a few weeks now. And Elvis has been not great in some games. Let's be honest. It works both directions. But I think what we've seen is a breakdown in trust between Elvis and the play in front of him, both directions. They don't think a save is going to be made, and he doesn't think the right defensive play is going to be made, and he's going to be hung out to dry again. And that is no way to play that position. Maybe this time off, maybe if they can play in front of Elvis like they did against the Islanders on Saturday, maybe you'll see a different Elvis. The one thing that worries me about Elvis, and I'm not a goaltending expert, but you talk to people who understand the position, and it looked like he was trying to do everything himself. And there were some saves where he's closer to the faceoff circle than he is to his own crease. There's just way too much movement there. And that's from a guy trying to be a hero. Feels like he needs to be a hero. And he just needs to play net. But he has to trust that the play in front of him is going to be responsible. And I think it's only natural that he not have that level of trust after the way that it's been to start the season. Does that make any sense?
No, it absolutely does, and I agree, and that's, I think, what was kind of like the big difference between what you see from Elvis and Corpy is how he plays. You know, Corpy's very much, you know, he's just, hey, I'm going to be in my net. I'll go behind and play the puck once in a while, but I'm going to stay here. You guys go get that. And Elvis is just, he's everywhere, and it always seems to lead to bad things, and I always get a little nervous when he's out there. It's like, you know, I just hear Steve Dangle in my back of my brain screaming, if you're a goalie, stay in the goal.
Yeah, right. No, I know what you mean.
I hope he learns a little something from watching Corpy do that.
Yeah, easy to say, though. Corpy, you could also say Corpy hasn't played enough games with this group to be totally knocked out of his comfort level either. Maybe it's coming there, too. My God. I showed Elvis a video. This is maybe too personal. He's got a little dog. I've got a little dog. I showed him a clip of my dog who likes to play goalie. And I pelted him with like four saves. The dog made an unbelievable left to right paw save. Forgive me. And Elvis gets a kick out of these sort of things. And he disparagingly said, he's better than I am right now.
Oh, so no.
He gets it. He's feeling it. I think he feels the weight of the world as well. But yeah, maybe this last week without games for him has been a much needed reset. This is why, even with 68 games to go and you're thinking, oh my God, is this season essentially over? There's still all sorts of interesting storylines like this. Elvis is an interesting storyline. Can he get it back together? Can this team start to play well in front of him? They get another chance to do it tonight.
Yeah, I hope they do. And I get a sneaky suspicion the two of them, between him and Jonas and the guys getting called up in the level of intensity for the play picks up. These Blue Jackets are going to mess around and win some games again. And
here we go.
Nate 9-10 range in the draft again.
Spoken like a Blue Jackets fan.
Well, yeah, it seems like here's another just kind of curious question. It seems like the last three, and you might, hopefully you have a better sense of what's going on with other teams than I obviously do, but it feels like the Jackets are always somewhere in the league lead with man games lost, at least over the last like three, four seasons, it seems like. And I don't know if that's just a stretch of bad luck guys not being prepared or what. It always seems like they turn into the Columbus Blue Monsters.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think the last couple of years they weren't too bad with that, actually. They've had years where they were just god awful. And do you remember the stretch, I want to say in the mid-2010s, where there was just a rash of groin injury after groin injury after groin injury?
I don't remember. I probably wasn't watching the team at that point. I started following them, I think, Tort's first year.
That's when
I moved to Columbus and started following the team. Yeah, I just remember there was one year where, like, Seth Jones went out, maybe Cam went out, and Jonas went out. And then there was a handful of others. And that's when Elvis kind of stepped into goal and had that stretch of shutouts to kind of keep them in the playoff race.
Yeah, that's the fun part of this, is it does give an opportunity to some new guys. You know what? Laine gets trapped. It gets caught up with Parise, hurts his ankle. You saw how good Branson got hurt. The ones you look for to say if they're not doing something right, my opinion, is if guys are hurt, soft tissue injuries, groin injuries, the same injuries, skating, just simply playing the game, not through somebody gets hit in the hand with a puck and breaks a hand. That's nothing that training has failed. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
And so, no, absolutely. Yeah,
the Line A thing Saturday, getting tangled, it just sucks. And Goodbranson going into the wall with Delorier letting up on him, that could have been a lot worse. That just happens in the course of a game. Corrali got elbowed in the head. There's really no training you can do to prepare to be elbowed in the head when you're not expecting it. If it were groin injuries after groin injuries, you'd say they're not doing something right. And those accusations were levied back in the mid-2010s. And they did make some changes, and they seem to have gotten behind it. But I think this is just bad luck.
Yeah. I bet you Zach's wishing he got hit in the face with a puck instead of having his shoulder driven into the boards.
Yeah, or just tucked it and took his medicine on the wall. But your human reaction, of course, is to put your hand up and try to break your call or your fall. Brutal. Hey, Paul, thanks for the questions.
You got it. Take care.
Thanks. Now I'm bringing somebody into the queue here. Their initials did not show up, so I'm not quite sure maybe anymore. Who is this? Because I don't see your initials.
Oh, sorry. This is Morgan.
Morgan.
Hi. I had two questions.
Sure.
One about Johnny Gaudreau. Huh? I feel like when I'm watching the games, frequently the commentators say he like pauses to see if there's going to be a penalty. And I've never played hockey, but in other sports, I've learned, you got to wait for the whistle. Do you get the sense that he looks for penalties more often than other players, or that many players do that? And then my second question is, this might just be my eyeballing and not looking at stats, but sure, it seems like Patrick Laine cannot get a pass to connect to his stick. Is that just me, or is there just bad luck, or what? Those are my two questions.
Yeah. So let me get the first one first. I have not noticed that. And I've not heard announcers say that. I mean, half the time I'm in the building watching with my own eyes, so I wouldn't hear them. So I'd love to hear what that is or what they're saying. I have not noticed it. I think there's a lot of times he's one of those guys that has such great acceleration. He will stop with the puck and survey the ice because he knows he can get going so quick with as quick as anybody and can pull away from people approaching. I've not noticed him looking for calls and stopping playing to see those, but that's something I will look for. I mean, it strikes me that would be a no-no because you just play and you let the whistles come as they go. I know this team as a franchise has been frustrated through the years believing, and the statistics prove it. It's kind of a hard thing to understand. They get so few power plays compared to other teams. Now, I don't know what the numbers are so far this year. I've not looked. But there were, I think last year there was a point where they had over the previous four or five seasons, like 300 fewer power plays than Colorado. So I think there are times where the Blue Jackets are looking around like, and Jake Voracek does this a lot. Like, what the hell was that? How is that not a penalty? And then he'll start up the ice. Voracek's one of the more vocal guys. But I've not seen that with Gaudreau. I'll give it a look. The second one, I think, you know, Line A is maybe an underrated passer. You're talking about receiving passes, though, correct?
Yeah, receiving passes.
I think players, and it is a strange thing. It was said to me earlier this season that Cole Sillinger right now can't even accept a pass. Like, there's so little confidence in his game that he's having trouble even just gathering pucks. I think players go through stretches with that as well. I've not seen Line A struggle more than others. I've seen Line A and Gaudreau and Voracek sometimes move the puck at a pace where the person who ends up with the puck isn't quite ready for it. Like, holy Lord, what is, oh, that's the puck on my stick. Cause he gets there so fast and they're such playmakers, but I've not noticed him struggling with receiving passes. Sometimes the ice is crap and it bounces over sticks, but he's usually pretty adept at that. And has one of the better one timers on the team. So his hand eye is typically elite level. I don't know if that helps you at all. Morgan, thanks for the question. I appreciate it. Thanks for stepping in. Let's get to some text questions. A lot of these are showing. Oh, here we go. Maybe you just need to look in the right place there, Porty. Rick B says, what about sending these 3 months and then bringing them up for the end of the season to get them ready for next year? So Rick, yeah, you're mentioning what we discussed in the opening a little bit. And this is where I'd love to have you on the queue rather than text, because then we could have a back and forth with this a little bit. I, you know, the one thing that's tough about this, and it's not a minor point, is you would be asking these guys to go from their base salaries of $925,000. That's $925,000, in case you're, for those listening at home, to making $80,000 in Cleveland. Okay. It's a huge cut. This would have to be explained to them in a group setting. This is what we see. We think this can be beneficial for you. If you handle this correctly, you'll end up making more money on the end of this contract, because your next contract will be that much better when you look that much more ready to play in the NHL. But that's a difficult conversation, and it may be something that's just a little too fantasy hockey or easy to say if you're not in that chair. But I think it could be a cool thing for all of those guys to go to Cleveland, play really big roles, and have a really neat Cleveland experience with big roles against good players and get ready to play those same roles in the NHL. I'm not sure what they're doing now is getting them ready for the NHL, to be who they're going to be in the NHL. When I see Kent Johnson as a healthy scratch, I go, what are we doing? What is the point of this? He needs to play. David Yurecek, I get it. He went to Finland as the seventh defenseman. And you got to bring a seventh. I get it. And he was deemed to be the seventh at the time. But how, I don't want to say damaging, but this is not helping his development to sit for 2+ weeks, not playing the AHL or the NHL. Like, that cannot happen. This kid needs games, big time games. So park him where he needs to be to play and thrive. I've seen some people question if Sillinger can go to the AHL. He can. He was drafted out of the USHL, so no problem there. But you have to understand that it would be a difficult conversation, and maybe these guys wouldn't be up for it. Maybe Chinik, and this is not coming from anywhere other than just going through the list of guys and their options. Maybe Chinikov would say, I'm not doing this. I'll go to the KHL instead. I'd rather go to the KHL. Who knows what that conversation could be like for any of these players. I think Johnson going down would be maybe the easier of all of them because he hasn't spent that much time up here. But Sillinger got used to an NHL life and an NHL paycheck last year. All right, moving on. Ryan D says, I love the 2016 Monsters and the guys that created. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the argument. And I'm not sure that argument would resonate with the players. It probably would suck to get sent down. But yeah, this is it's an interesting time. Let's see. Bobby B says, so prior to the season, I thought, quote, what's better this year, 92 points and likely out or 72 points in the Bedard talk? Obviously, with injuries, 72 looks more likely. If you were in charge of the development, what would you do with the kids? How is a young player like Jack going to be health bombed? Young player like Jack. I'm not sure what health bombed is or what Jack is. So, Bobby B, if you're listening to this and you can post a comment there, just sort of maybe add some clarity there. I like the Cleveland option. Again, easy to say when you're not having that discussion with the players or their agents. But get Carson Meyer up here. Keep Brendan Gaunce up here. I like the way Brendan Gaunce has played. They've got other guys down there that Justin Richards is down there. They've got some players down there that could give you at least what those guys are playing right now. Now, they probably don't have the long-term upside. You would hope they don't. These are first-round draft picks we're talking about with the Blue Jackets. But, you know, you're talking third and fourth lines. You're talking 12 and a half minutes at the NHL level. These guys need to play. So those are my thoughts. James V says, have you spoken much to Gaudreau? You get any sense that he is second-guessing his decision to come to Columbus? Well, James, I will note, I was accused of asking that very question in New Jersey. I didn't. I didn't think it was a bad question then. Didn't ask it, but I didn't think it was a bad question. And it sure isn't a bad question now. Now, Johnny Gaudreau is not going to publicly say, yeah, big mistake. But a little bit of him has to be curious about what he stepped into here. Now, this isn't always going to be the situation. I think Johnny Gaudreau is smart enough, certainly, to know that anything can happen in an NHL season. They've had some tough seasons in Calgary while he was there. Things can fall apart on you, and that's what they've done here very, very early in the season. I think he's still probably wise enough to look at this and say, you know what, this guy can play, that guy can play. This is going to be maybe a little longer road than I anticipated. This is not going to be playoffs right away. We're not going to go play the Cups and the Cup, the Flames in the Cup final, certainly the first year, but let's pull together. He's part of the organization now. This is his responsibility. I see no sign of that cracking, but I'll chat with him. That's not a game day question necessarily, but I think that's a good topic for a story, even though I think Gaudreau would probably say all of the right things and probably honestly is feeling the right things. And so, yeah, I think it's reasonable now. Again, I didn't think it was unreasonable before. Boy, some people were pissed off, though, thinking that that's the question I asked. One guy was telling people to stop following me on Twitter because I asked that question that he didn't like. That's where we're at. All right. Post some more questions. Step into the queue. We've got a few more minutes to go here. Blue Jackets, Flyers tonight. Tortorella in town. Tortorella's got a nice, healthy mark on his cheek. Something about a horse. The man rescues horses. Horses are unpredictable animals. A horse may or may not have gotten torts in the face whilst he was doing his daily barn duties. I can only imagine the words that were uttered by John Tortorella. Now, he loves that. He loves those horses more than just about any beat reporter he's ever met. Just about any. I said, not all. But I can only imagine that scene. And I'm glad he's doing okay, because that can be a damn dangerous situation. So he is in town. And the Flyers, I don't think there's any major – Flyers are struggling. When they came into town last week, they were playing quite well. Now they've kind of become the team that everybody thought they would be. So, you know, I think the Blue Jackets better be prepared to work, though. And here's something from – I can't see the initial on this. There's a few of these. It says, oh, and a request. Can you do a puff piece on everyone's numbers? Oh, okay. I like that. Any other requests you got, let me know. In other words, why you wear the number you wear. Yeah. Hey, buddy. I don't know who sent this, but thank you. And I'm going to need all the puff pieces I can get the rest of the way. It kind of hit me today standing in the corner of the rink during practice. My God, there's 68 of these to go. So we're going to peel off and do some different things. And so we're not just going to do game coverage. And I hope you guys are okay with that. Some of these games no longer are going to have that much meaning. If there's something super compelling from a game, you can bet we're going to write about it. I believe unless something else happens tonight, I'm going to be writing Jack Roslovic for tomorrow. So here's a question from Ronald D. It says, what's your view of the current leadership group? Seems like some similar personalities, quiet, lead by example types, Zach, Gus, Boone. Does it help to break out of a slump to have more vocal leadership? You know, that's a great question. And I have historically shied away from weighing too much in on this kind of stuff. I think you have to be careful. We are not in the room. And we're in the room at times to do interviews and stuff. But when I say we're not in the room, I mean, we're not in the room, obviously, for the sort of pregame getting together, the speeches, the in between period pep talks, obviously. I think Boone is a hell of a captain. Maybe they need a different variable as an alternate, but I think Branson's a talker. I think Werenski's a talker. I think Gus is pretty, I don't want to say mature, because it's not an issue of maturity or not. I think he's pretty consistent, pretty responsible, but a super respected guy. I think Corrali's a leader and a talker. I'll tell you one thing, though, that's a problem, and it's a problem with this team, and it's a problem with every team. When your best guys are struggling, it can be hard to be the guy that does the talking when you're also one of the guys struggling. And, you know, they always say lead by example. Well, if you're not playing very well, it can be hard to call other guys out. And it maybe doesn't have the same resonance as it does if you are. I think Gaudreau will probably grow into that role. I think Line A takes a moment here or there. But, you know, some of these guys just haven't played well enough, I think, where they feel qualified or justified to be the guy calling other guys out. And I also think it got so ugly so fast that everyone was kind of shocked. Like, I felt that in New Jersey, that 7-1 loss, where you just walked around the room and yeah, I just got the sense that guys were processing or trying to process what the hell just happened. So it hit really, really fast. So I hope that answers your question, Ron. I don't want to say they're not this or they're not that if we're not really there for the nitty gritty, and we're not. Ed N says, where is JD? He's been absent during the early season about play, coaching, and management. Well, he's not a day-to-day quote anyways. Yarmo is the general manager, the guy that runs the roster, and JD speaks at different times. He's the executive to this. I don't think he's ducking anything. I just think this is the normal course of his job. I haven't asked to interview him and been shot down. I talked to him just the other day. He's available. He's present. So ESPN has the game tonight. It'll not be on Fox. It is a 7:30 start. The Athletic will be there, of course. And I think that's it for questions. Here's one. Kyle Z from the weeds here. As for the pending UFAs, Nyquist and Gavrikov, what is the sense you get on their futures with the club? Well, that is a big TBD. I think they want to keep Gavrikov. I mean, I would think with some of the struggles they've seen with their young kids that maybe Nyquist has a chance to sign a short-term extension now, which would have been unthinkable before, but we'll see. I think all of these trade deadline is in March. I think there's a lot of time for this stuff to play out. They want to keep Gavrikov. Listen, I mean, they are so thin on that back end, especially with Werenski coming back from shoulder surgery next season. That's going to take him some time to get up. I can't imagine them letting Gavrikov go and filling that void. You would suspect that Juracek is going to be here next year. You would suspect that Matichuk and Kulemans are going to be a step closer to here. Probably Matichuk maybe still AHL. Kulemans probably AHL with some sniffs at the NHL roster. But that blue line is going to transform. It feels like it is right now in that awkward stage of evolution where you can't really see what it's going to become. You just know that it's not thriving. And that's where it's at right now. But I think there's still some time to determine what happens with Gavrikov and Nyquist. I know Nyquist wants to badly stay here, really likes it here. I think he'd like to win here. So I think he'd be sad if he moved along and didn't get to experience that. Okay, thanks everybody for the questions. Really appreciate it. We'll do this again next week. You've been listening to the Nationwide Live Room. It is not a podcast without you. And I appreciate everybody chiming in. I hope to have more of you again next week. And we'll talk to you then. Take care.